independent in thought and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
I've had many people call up, oh, gee, we have information on this factor or this person or, frankly, Hillary. That's very standard in politics. Politics is not the nicest business in the world, but it's very standard.
It's not the nicest business in the world. It is ugly at times. We all love eating hot dogs and hamburgers, but we don't want to see how it's made. Politics has kind of become that way. Joining us now, as he does every Friday at this time, Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. Jim, man, there's a lot of things going on in the world of D.C. Most of it, though, is more soap opera than actual legislation. And today, another bomb dropped, if you will, with some sort of counterintelligence guy that was also in the room. And that does not look good if you're somebody who's neutral at all.
Now, as they say, the optics are terrible on this. It's not necessarily the crime, if there was one, that gets you in trouble. It's the cover-up and the fact they're not getting these facts out there in a quick manner, and they're constantly asking the same questions and coming up with different answers, doesn't look good for them. Whether anything happened or not, we don't know. But the best thing to do is just get it all out there, let it get digested, and move along, because we've spent a whole week with this now trying to sort through all of this, what's really involved, who was really there, what really happened, who really knew what, and so on and so forth.
You know, it's funny because it's the optics, and we live in a world of, I mean, we're a very visual world, and you look and you see all this thing going on, Jim, and you think to yourself, What's the next thing to come out? Because first it was, I met with this woman, she didn't really offer me anything. Then secondly, now today it's, oh, by the way, somebody else was in the room, and this guy was a former Soviet counterintelligence officer, still has ties to the Kremlin, who also happens to be a lobbyist. It's, you're thinking, okay, what's the next thing I'm waiting is, oh, and by the way, Vladimir Putin was there, and he was in disguise, he was dressed as a cowboy. That's what I'm waiting for, something like that.
I would not be surprised. I mean, the thing that's my concern is there going to be a revelation? Oh, yeah, by the way, Donald Trump Sr. was actually there. That's where this starts getting messy, because right now, none of this touches Donald Trump himself. It's the family and Kushner and all of the staff. But if you get Donald Trump in that meeting, this actually does become something that was a little bit more interesting for everyone to look at, even though already the liberal media is trying to push this out. 724 on the CNN, WAPO, New York Times, MSNBC channels.
You know, Jim, and we talked to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. And you know, one thing I said earlier this week about the whole thing, Trump loves his son. Trump is, you know, this is a guy who is, he is first and foremost, I believe, a father, and I think a damn good father, too. You can say a lot of things about the guy, and some of which I think bear out to be true, but he seems to be an amazing father. You start to wonder, when are they going to start to play the game where your kid could be indicted, but you never know, and if you step away, maybe we just all look the other way. That's what I feel he would, to save his son's ass.
Yeah, no, it's a good question, and I do believe that he has been a good father. I know many of the people that supported Trump, one of the comments was made was, you don't see his kids getting in trouble. They came from privilege, but you don't see them driving down the street at, you know, 120 miles an hour on drugs in New York City. You don't see that happening to them. So they're, you know, that they think there was a good father influence there. Yeah, it's a good question. It's distinctly possible, but at this point, there really hasn't been enough for us to get to the point where we're talking about a crime. There's just not a lot of there, as you've said, and a lot of other people have said. There simply isn't anything that raises to something other beyond curiosity and something that gives the liberal media what they're hoping for is like this next news bite is going to be the one that's going to make it really turn into a crime. Just like we were, all the Republicans were waiting for the next drove of Hillary emails. Remember, those were coming out month by month last year. And we kept hoping, wow, the next batch, that's the one that's really going to get her. I think all of the media out there right now is hoping the next piece of information that comes out, that's going to be the one that's got the real jewel in it for this to actually become a crime, rather than just kind of a, I don't know, something everyone's just staring at.
I thought Ted Cruz had the soundbite of the week.
When I'm in Washington, every other question is about Russia. But when I go back to Texas, nobody asks about Russia.
I thought that was the soundbite of the week. I think the reality is that It's big deal for CNN, for MSNBC, for the Washington Post, the New York Times, the LA Times. It's a big deal for them. But when it comes to somebody in Cedar Rapids or Fargo, it comes to somebody in you know, up in the, you know, the Great Lakes area, it comes to somebody up in Maine or somebody in California, this is no more than just an annoyance to them, because the reality is there are other things out there that D.C. is failing at, and those things actually matter to people.
Yeah, no, Ted Cruz has hit it right on the head, and you've said that too. When you talk to the people out there, are they asking you about Russia, or are they asking you about what's going to happen to health care? What's going to happen with immigration reform? What's going to happen with jobs? Can I continue to pay my bills? Am I going to be able to send my kids to college? Can I afford my health care? Am I going to lose my doctor? Those are the things that affect people on a daily basis. The Russian thing, yeah, if you're in the beltway, if you're in the circle, if you're, you know, if you're someone who's in the bubble of politics and loves it, yeah, you're going to basically be feasting on this. But for the average American, just like Mr. Cruz said, no, this isn't something that's relevant to the average American with worrying about putting food on the table on a daily basis.
And yet they continue. And you know what's funny is we can't be the only ones to know this. Smarter people have to know this. That's how you know that they're out of sync with America, because the way I have looked at this thing, and I try to spend very little time on it. You know, I'll touch on it, you know, a couple times throughout the show, but try to be as brief as possible. The way that I look at this is these people who look at somebody like Donald Trump, Jim, and they say, you are really, you're morally corrupt, you're morally bankrupt, you're the worst person we've ever met, you're all of these kind of things, and yet we feel like it's our duty single-handedly to take you down because we know what's better for America and we know it's right for America, and for all the things we think you are, we're willing to do the same because the ends justify the mean. And it has become almost laser-like focus to destroy this man. And it really boggles the mind that the media has that much kind of focus to do this. It scares you to think about if the next guy's in line and they don't like him, well, you're just going to do the same thing?
Well, yeah, and it also gets the people basically spun up into this fever to where if this next little tidbit of news isn't it, you start they start getting so angry that, oh, that, you know, that Trump just can't be caught. Trump just can't be, you know, he's the Teflon Trump. He can't be caught. He's so corrupt, but he just can't be thrown in jail, that I'm going to go out there and do something about it myself. And that's the kind of things you got to start looking at and got to be concerned with, is that you get people into such a fever with what I call Trump derangement syndrome, that they keep, you know, they keep thinking the next one's going to be it. The next one's going to be it. The next one's going to be it. And in many cases, there just isn't any there. Then, you know, the crime that Donald Trump committed was the fact that he beat Hillary Clinton. Well, that's not a crime. I mean, if you're on the other side of the fence, a lot of people lived through 8 years of Barack Obama. We're not happy with it, but everyone survived. The other side's going to have to live with 4 years and maybe 8 years of Donald Trump, regardless of how bad they don't want him in the office. But until the man commits a crime or high crimes and misdemeanors, he's going to be there.
And it boggles the mind that we're at this point, but this is where we are. It is, it's nuts. It's soap opera. And I think there's going to be more fatigue along the way. And I think they're doing themselves a disservice. And I think they're doing and I also think they think the media thinks very little of the people and the brains that the people have, that at some point in time, they're not going to just go, I've had enough. And that includes even people on the progressive side who are just getting, I think, fatigued with it. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us. He's going to stick with us as he does all the way through this hour. I tell you what, guys, if you're traveling, Jim, you travel a lot. How many miles a week you think roll out there?
300.
Good week, 300. Probably a lot more in a week where you got to go up and down here in the state of California. Get yourself Car Shield. It's amazing. 24/7 roadside assistance. This, you know, people talk, oh, there's extended vehicle service. Let me tell you what this gives you. This gives you something like none of these other ones give you. Peace of mind, yes. 24/7 roadside assistance, absolutely. A rental car should something happen to your car. But the big thing is to say, hey, you know what? You pick the place that you want to take your car. They will take care of the rest. You don't have to worry about being short. Oh, man, I'm going to be short this week. I better hope they send that check. And then 6-8 weeks later, that check shows up, but you've been in a crunch. Nope. They deal with that person directly, so you don't have to worry or fret. The cost of fixing anything from a water pump, $500, to $1,000 for a sensor, or $5,000 for an engine is crazy. But Car Shield will make sure that you have everything you need and then some taken care of, including peace of mind. Don't wait. Don't let it get too late. Call today. All right? Simple and easy. 800. That's right. Go to CarShield. And Car6100, 800-CAR-6100. You go there. You make that phone call. Tell them Benson sent you. You can save yourself 10% or go to carshield.com/Benson, carshield.com/Benson. It will save you 10%. You will thank me. Your car will thank me. It is something that is an absolute must, especially if you spend any kind of time on the road. Go to carshield.com/Benson. Save yourself 10%. A deductible may apply. The Chad Benson Show, Facebook, at Chad Benson Show, Twitter, CHADBENSON, Chad at ChadBensonShow.com. More with Jim Kennedy straight ahead. Chad Benson Show.
Fresh farm to table. This is the Chad Benson Show.
Obamacare's years-long hurdle toward collapse is rapidly approaching its seemingly inevitable conclusion. Total meltdown.
Mitch McConnell right there. Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research right here. And here we go. Another week, another opportunity to talk about health care. Another bill that is being rolled out that doesn't seem to make anybody happy. Jim, this thing's not getting done anytime soon, and it may not get done without the help of the Democrats.
No, it definitely isn't. It's not something that's looking very good. The Republicans had a lot of enthusiasm. They don't have a lot to actually offer up right now, unfortunately. And it's not something that is going to get done. Like you said, there's just nothing in there that really is attractive to the people. There's a bunch of scare numbers about the 22 million that are going to lose their insurance. Those are just generally going to be people that are going to fall off the insurance rolls because they're young and they don't need to buy insurance without a mandate. So there really isn't a problem of where people who need insurance are going to fall off it. But it may go up for some, and it's just going to be a mess at this point because a lot of people still don't know what is really in it. The bill got released finally, but there's still lots of pages to go through to find out how it's going to affect everybody.
You know, one of the big things that is in it and that a lot of people are upset about is there is an opportunity to buy the bare bones minimum. And that was a big thing about Ted Cruz. He wanted to have an opportunity for people who wanted to buy essentially catastrophic policy as a just in case, but otherwise they'd pay with cash throughout their entire life kind of scenario, or at least year by year. And, you know, that the fear is that is going to set up two pools. People who are, and those are going to be mostly relatively healthy people where they know they're going to make their money off of. And the other people, older people, people who are chronically ill or people that have pre-existing conditions, they're going to see their premiums potentially rise greatly.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's part of the problem it's going to be is, and again, the subject that I talk about when it comes to healthcare so much is none of this does anything to reduce the cost of providing health care to Americans. It doesn't prevent them from having access. It doesn't help them have access. It doesn't do anything to change the cost. We're talking about access to insurance through this bill and through Obamacare. The actual cost of delivering health care, the tests, the procedures, the box of Kleenex in there, the Tylenol, none of that is addressed in this. And until something again is done where we can address the cost, we're going to have these things where you're basically just moving a fixed pile of money around to between who's going to pay for it. And at some point, we need to reduce the cost of health insurance because it's simply going out of control and we're not going to be able to afford it going on much farther.
And you talk about the cost of health insurance, but also just the cost to individuals alone. This is Jonathan Wick, a TransUnion, talking about the fact that what we used to pay now on a bill compared to what we're paying at this moment and where we could be headed.
About 10 years ago, patients represented 10% of a bill, and now they're 30% of a bill in terms of their portion that's owed. And so they really are becoming a payer of sorts and a funding mechanism for the hospital, and that's been an afterthought for the most part.
A funding mechanism for the hospital, and that's something else that, you know, needs to be addressed. These hospitals are a cathedral, some of these amazing hospitals, and they're beautiful to look at, and they make you feel comfortable. But do we need 28 statues and 95 fountains?
No, probably not. And they also are talking, you also have in there very nice MRI machines and some of the best technology that's available. And don't forget, the reason why people still come to America for their healthcare is because we do provide some of the best, if not the best, in the world, though unfortunately it's expensive to provide it. Though I don't really feel very comfortable finding out that I'm a provider of revenue to a hospital when I need to go in and have a procedure done. I'd like to be considered a patient rather than a provider of revenue to the hospital. That's a little uncomfortable.
That is uncomfortable. Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research. He joins us every single Friday. You can follow him at Righty Jim. And, you know, the fact that we account for 30% of the bill, it's not because maybe we're even so much paying any more as far as for a procedure. It's the other things along the way. You've talked about it. You know, box of tissues, that's $40. An aspirin's $100 and all these kind of crazy things that go along with it. And it drives me crazy because you could probably look at those bills and get them back down to where you're paying 10%. But most people don't advocate for themselves, and that's also an issue.
Right. It's also the problem with healthcare being provided is that for any procedure you go in, there's a plethora of different costs that you can pay for the same thing. You've got insurance, you pay $300 for your MRI. You don't have insurance, $1,800 for the MRI. You've got cash on the barrel head for the MRI with no insurance, $800. Well, why is it so much different price for the same thing? It's the same procedure. It doesn't cost them anymore because I've got insurance and you don't have insurance, but the guy with cash doesn't have insurance either. It's simply it's not really driven towards a competitive market for procedures and for healthcare. And we need to start looking at that because insurance isn't gonna continue to pick up all the bills. And like you said, more and more people are gonna have to be paying more and more percentage of this because of those various reasons to where they can just pass those costs along. And insurance companies are taking it out of our pocket as the consumer rather than paying it out of their pocket.
He joins us every single Friday. Jim Kennedy is here. He's gonna be with us for the rest of the hours. We talk about everything, break it down from top to bottom. What to look forward to as far as getting this healthcare thing done, as well as tax reform, immigration reform, things of that nature. Text the program 323-538-2423 at Righty Jim for Jim Kennedy, and you can always follow me at Chad Benson Show. It is the Chad Benson Show.
Independent in thoughts and punk rock in life. It's the Chad Benson Show.
Senate Republicans introduced their new version of Trump Care. The meat of this bill is exactly the same as it was before, and in some ways, they've somehow managed to make it even worse.
That right there, Chucky, not the doll, but Schumer. Healthcare, it's going to make it worse. Everything is worse. I love it. Jim Kennedy from Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research joins us as he does every Friday. What I love is that you can just say anything in politics and throw it out there, and somehow people just don't even bother to, you know, dispute the facts. It's going to be worse. How do you know it's going to be? The CBO's not even out. You can't even dispute the horrible CBO's numbers because there are no numbers, but you throw it out there.
I think the Democrats would be better putting Chucky the doll out there than Chuck Schumer at times. I'm sorry. The man just doesn't make a lot of sense. And he's just so infuriating. And he's just trying to throw gasoline on a fire and try to put this sensational stuff out there that, you know, that basically being a Republican causes cancer or causes death. And it's just ridiculous. He tries to sound statesmanlike, but he doesn't. He just sounds silly with some of the stuff that he puts out there, and it doesn't really help the Democratic brand. It doesn't help basically starting a conversation. It's like, why do you want to reach across the aisle when that's the guy's statement on your healthcare bill? Yeah, I'm sure it's not what he wants, but let's say something about, you know what, we don't like it. We'd like to take a look at further at it. Maybe we can sit down with Mitch McConnell and work on some sort of a compromise where we can work out items that each side likes. But no, he just throws all the gasoline on the fire and then throws a match on it and walks away. So it's not really helpful. If you really want someone to reach across the aisle, just don't throw fire on the situation.
What are the chances Mitch McConnell looks around and realizes that there's going to be six or seven people that are going to say no, and he's going to say, you know what, we're close, I'm not going to give up, and if that's the way you're going to be, I'm going to find out who's a solid yes, and I'll go get the rest if I have to with the Democrats. What are those chances of actually happening?
Well, I think it's probably where he is. I think that's actually where we are right now. The problem is the second part of that statement, the ability to go out and grab the rest of those people that he needs to get to 50 votes and to peel off some Democrats. There are some Democrats, as we said before, that are running in red states for re-election next year. And every week we get closer and closer to the primary season coming up for the 2018 midterms. So they are cognizant of that. But until there's something out there that people are going to get behind and have a groundswell where they're going to start calling up their senator in those red states and say, hey, I want this, they're going to be on the fence, and they're not going to jump off of the Democratic side until there's a good reason to. So until we come up with Mr. McConnell come up with something like that, it's not going to be happening. You won't be able to get those additional votes.
Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research with us. What are the chances this doesn't get done, and what then? That's a big thing because, you know, we've heard about all the maneuvering and how he's a master of the Senate and the things that he's allowed to do. But the realization that this thing's not going to get the votes it needed, and that may not be some Democrats that are willing to jump ship, even if you give them some of the things. What then? Because as we know it, Obamacare eventually is going to fail sooner rather than later. So what's the next step from here? Because I don't foresee how you're going to get the Freedom Caucus and all of these people that are, they want you to go further, and then you got to keep the moderates happy. I don't see how they're going to fix this.
No, I don't, at least not in this legislative session. I don't think it goes anywhere from there. I think you start again looking at tax reform or immigration at that point. Remember, the House has got two immigration bills that were passed before the recess that the Senate's going to need to look at. So maybe you kind of basically switch over to the immigration bills while maybe you got some people working in back rooms trying to put together some meetings to work on a health care bill that you can get 50 votes on. Because without that, it's not going to go anywhere in this legislative session, but they still need to do something, because come the end of the year, if there's no tax reform, there's no immigration bill, and there's no health care, you're going to have a very upset Donald Trump, and you're going to have a feeding frenzy from the media about, it's been 12 months, what have you done for us, Donald Trump? And he's going to want to have answers to that, to those questions. And at this point, other than just a couple of immigration bills passed, there's not a whole lot that he's going to be able to is not a lot he's going to be able to lean on come the next State of the Union, January 2018.
This right here is Rep. Paul Gosar of Arizona.
I was one of the original people bringing up this idea that we haven't done our work. We don't need to go home until we get our work done. And that means with the budget, that means with health care, that means with getting a strong start on the tax, and also the debt ceiling.
So let's just say health care doesn't get done. Then you look and you've got taxes, you've got immigration bills, you've got the debt ceiling, you've got regulation reform, you've got all kinds of things that are sitting out there. And they've got to do something because they're failing. And I can't blame everything on Trump when it comes to, you know, you didn't get this done because Trump this or because Trump that. You know, people will blame him because he's like the head coach. You're going to get blamed for that. But the truth is, you and I both know, this is about legislative matters that need to get done. He can go in and sign something, but that can get challenged. There's a lot of things. Those things get overturned. You're going out and putting a bill together. It's a much different thing, Jim. And my fear is that the Republicans are going to use this whole Russia thing as a giant excuse not to really do any movement and therefore step away from everything, saying, we tried, but man, this is Trump's fault. This whole Russia thing is blowing up in our face.
Yeah, the problem is, even with bad numbers as Trump has, I think Congress has a worse approval rating than even Donald Trump does. So they've got to go back to their constituents in less than 18 months and stand for re-election. So they're going to want, you know, and they ask them, if you come up to your congressperson and say, what have you done in the last 2 years other than stand between Donald Trump and getting his bills passed? And by the way, I voted for Donald Trump. Why should I vote for you? There's a lot of congressmen that don't want to have that conversation with constituents, especially if they're going to be doing town halls 12 months from now. So I don't know why they don't, as the gentleman suggested, stick around for the summer recess and not have a summer recess. we have Congress that can run 12 months a year. Let's have Congress that runs 12 months a year, but actually does something with that extra time that they're going to spend rather than fleeing August. They got air conditioning. This isn't 1776 anymore. They can stay cool inside of the nice Capitol building during August. And let's get there and let's knock some heads together and let's get some bills done. Let's get health care fixed, or let's get an immigration bill, or let's get the Senate to buy onto Trump's wall or something like that so that Trump can get part of his agenda through the Congress before the end of the year.
Talking to Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research, we're going over the sounds of the week and what people said and didn't say, what they should and shouldn't have said. Jamie Dimon, very important man in the world of business, a guy that has been around quite a while, was on today talking about stuff, and he kind of let it be known how he feels the government's running.
We have become one of the most bureaucratic, confusing, litigious societies on the planet. It's almost an embarrassment being an American citizen traveling around the world and listening to the stupid shit we have to deal with in this country. And, you know, at one point, we all have to get our act together or we won't do what we're supposed to do for the average Americans.
Yeah. And this is a guy who is, I mean, he is, you name it, he's run it. J.P. Morgan is where he's at, but he's done, he's been on the board at the Fed. He has been, Times Magazine's one of the most powerful, influential people in the world. He is one of the big, you know, institutional investors. This guy, when he talks, markets and people listen. And, man, I thought he was spot on there. And, again, it's the dysfunction in D.C. And it's front and center right now. And this is the guy who speaks business.
No, absolutely. But the thing is, he's a big government guy, so I'm not exactly sure what he's ranting about other than it's just that he's ranting that the Republicans aren't doing anything right now. But he's right. I mean, it is a swamp. It's a quagmire. We've got too much regulation. We're too interested in suing somebody rather than working on a solution with somebody. He's absolutely accurate on all of those points. But he doesn't really propose a whole lot of ideas. This became a real cause celeb audio piece this morning from a lot of my conservative friends that were very interested in it. But it's like, you don't know Jamie Dimon's background. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with
his aspect. He definitely is a kind of bigger kind of government kind of guy. But he did talk about taxes.
Unfortunately, people write about this thing like it's for corporations. It's not for corporations. Competitive taxes are important for business and business growth, which is important for jobs and wage growth. And you know, honestly, we should be ringing that alarm bell, every single one of you, every time you talk to a client.
And I think he's absolutely right about that. You know, I mean, I think a lot of people, and I think if people realize how taxes really work and that corporations don't pay those taxes because they move that money around, they take it all over the place. They have shell corporations. It's a shell game in a lot of ways. But when we talk about real tax reform, that really hits at the home of small businesses, sole proprietors, the things that are the engines of this country. That is what is going to drive us. And if they don't get tax reform done, at what point in time do we just look at this and say, my God, you got what are we doing with you people?
No, absolutely. We do have a problem with corporate taxes. Right now we have the highest corporate taxes in theory in the world as far as percentage basis. The problem is nobody is virtually paying those taxes. You have all the high tech companies. They've got the money parked offshore. They send it through Ireland. And they've got all these tax tricks to where they basically wind up paying virtually nothing, like you said earlier. So that's got to get rid of. We've got to basically give them a holiday, charge them 15%, bring all the money back, put it into jobs in America. That'd be a great way to kick some jobs off. Trump's been talking about that since the campaign. So we need to work on getting corporate tax reform to where there's no more of these dodges and tricks and loopholes. Basically, you make $1 billion, you pay, let's say, 20-25% of that, $250 million, $300 million of that in taxes, and you don't hide it all off in a bank in Ireland waiting for it to be repatriated one day.
His name's Jim Kennedy. You can follow along at Righty Jim. You can follow me at Chad Benson Show. We're going to wrap it up straight ahead. Some more stuff to talk to. Some fun stuff like crazy Mayweather and crazier McGregor getting busy, and maybe even some racial overtones inside of that. We'll wrap it up straight ahead. Chad Benson Show.
We're happy to serve you here at the Chad Benson Show.
You think it's too hot for pork chops?
Would you like fries with your fast food politics?
Man, I'm hungry. I'm gonna get some fries.
Sure.
I don't know why I ever come in here.
Friday, wrapping it up, Jim Kennedy from the Kennedy Institute of Public Policy Research is with us, as he always is on Fridays. Jim, today they decided that Charlie Gard was going to have a once-over by the doctor who is proposing the look and the treatment that may save his life. Of course, Charlie Gard's a young 11-month-old who's currently, for all intents and purposes, kind of in the custody of the National Health Insurance in Britain, and they want to do an experimental treatment here. It's going to be paid for by many people who've donated money. It's not going to cost the British anything, and it's become a big story over there, and a lot of people are pointing out, look, this is what national healthcare is like, and I'm trying to explain to people, this is a one-off. It happens a few times before, but this is a look into how governments run healthcare across the board feels.
No, absolutely. It's. I mean, all in all, unfortunately, there's really no good answer to this. This is a very tragic case. Like you said, it is a one-off, and I feel bad for the family. I prayed for the family before because the child, because it's just something that there is no real winners in this situation. A lot of people are using it, as you said, to say this is why you don't want socialized medicine. If your kid costs too much to care for, they're going to cut you off and kill them. But there really isn't a good situation. You know, there really isn't a good outcome for this poor child in any sort of way. And I wish they really weren't using it, either side was using it as a political method, and just let the poor kid, you know, let the poor family go through their tragedy in peace.
You know, I looked at this, and I'm, you know, if you have a kid and you ask any parent, they'll do anything for their child, absolutely anything, as they should. And give the doctors are saying anywhere between 10% and 20%, 30%, 40%, 50% chance to improve his life tremendously. I have said that I think it's at the point now where the last thing the British government wants to do and be seen as is somebody who wanted to give up on a child who may get fixed. The egg on the face there, and the anger and backlash that would come on to them would be out of control. I don't think they would realize it, because this thing has got worldwide attention. The Pope, Trump has talked about it. This would be a huge slap in their face.
No, absolutely. And then they don't want to look bad. And that's one of the problems when you start looking at socialized medicine, though, is there is a point to where you're not going to necessarily have the absolute top care. You're not going to have the experimental medicine involved in many cases, because it's this thing where you've got to look at the cost for the cost benefit over an entire society, not just one child, which is unfortunate. But you go back to what you call the Sarah Palin death panels and all that. But you're really going to have a group of bureaucrats coming down in some cases to whether somebody deserves medical care or not, and that's just not a situation a lot of Americans are used to. And it's, you know, like I said, I wish them the best, absolutely, with whatever happens.
And you know, you said something there that I don't think people realize is. Even and insurance companies do this as well. I mean, let's not just say it's a government, but sometimes, you know, insurance companies say we're going to deny that because we think that is an experimental. And you're like, it's a bone marrow transplant. It's been done for years. And in Britain, you won't get this kind of experimental thing, because there's no reason for them. There is a place that they take things, and that's as far as they're going to go. And I don't think people realize that when you take the money out of a lot of stuff, people stop doing things, because if there's no money in it, nobody gonna do it.
No, and that's why we have expensive MRI machines and some of the best PET technology and all of those different things, robotic surgeries, because we have a competitive market. We have a somewhat competitive marketplace to where we're willing to pay for that top of the line stuff. And in Britain, you may get it where you only may get a robotic, joint replacement machine in maybe one regional center in the country. You're not going to get it in every hospital in every city in the UK. And that's where the difference comes up with the socialized medicine. I mean, Chad, you went through it, and I believe you said for some things you had to come back to America because the timeline and the technology just simply wasn't available for you to get it done reasonably when you were in the UK.
Absolutely. Just being sick, having gastroenteritis, like Montezuma's Revenge. I had to get to America because I didn't know what it was, and it was bothering me, and I was sick for days, and I lost about a stone and a half in a very short period of time, which is about, you know, I was losing 20 pounds in maybe a week and a half. It was disturbing, and I couldn't get in to see my doctor, my general practitioner. As they say, I couldn't get into the surgery. That's what they call their doctor's offices. I had to come over here, and it was frustrating. We move from there to wacky, crazy. We've got about a minute and a half here. I want to play this. This was McGregor, who was just playing the part of P.T. Barnum / Luckbrecon to a T.
A lot of media seem to be saying I'm against black people. That's absolutely f***ing ridiculous. Do they not know I'm half black? Yeah! I'm half black from the belly button down.
Oh, Jim, you're going to watch it, though, right? Because it is a spectacle, and you just can't not watch it.
Well, you know what? I really didn't have a lot of interest in this thing at first, but after this press conference that they've run between L.A. and Toronto and, I think, New York, it certainly is something that is... And now London has really become interesting to see what exactly is going to happen. I got to give them credit. They've created quite a show out of this, and they're, it's going to certainly help their pay-per-view sales, because this was something
Absolutely,
that was like
man.
A yawn.
Absolutely.
But yeah, this is certainly something that's really interesting.
Have yourself a wonderful weekend, everybody. As always, I bid you all adieu. Night, night, Jack.